Thank you very much, Sid Weil and co-chairman John Wheaty, John Rao, Dick Guggenheim, Reverend Graham, Father Wheaty, and my distinguished friends, the candidates, my good friends of Hamilton County. I'm delighted to be back. I can't say that I really expected a year ago when I was here last that I'd be here again in the same hall, maybe speaking to the same people. It's some mark of the progress of our efforts that we should be coming back a second time. I'm not entirely sure why you've chosen me to speak at a kickoff victory dinner for a municipal election. The only municipal election in which I was ever involved as a candidate for mayor, I lost. But then I recall with some reassurance that a year ago I came here to speak in behalf of Jack Gilligan and we won. And I hope you're not selfish about this victory dinner kickoff. I hope you'll share it with me and that we'll apply it not only to this November, but to the following November as well. And I feel so deeply about that that I'll be happy to speak for you or against you, whichever will do you the most good. Because you see, I think you have the look of winners. And I've been practicing that look. And I hope to have it down pat by November of 1972. And I think it's time we all started a winning streak. You and me and the Cincinnati Bengals. All three of us have a loss, and all three of us are going to come back. I'm very interested in the forces of reform that bring this group together, the candidates and the audience. For 10 years, you've been divided here in Cincinnati. You've split the vote. And the result has been that the Republican Party happily controlled the city council. We had a similar experience in 1968. I don't want to see it repeated nationally, and I know you don't intend to see it repeated here in Cincinnati. Because next month, a determined partnership is going to change all that. You've learned the truth, that Democrats and Charterites, or whatever you call independent-minded citizens who are concerned about the welfare of their communities or their country, can fight together and can reshape the politics of this city and of our country. You can do it with candidates like Charles Taft. You know, I feel as though I were back in Maine praising Republicans at a Democratic gathering. But then this isn't a Democratic gathering, or is it? But here's the son of a president who put principle above politics and told the truth about this city and its government. Then you have candidates like Bill Chenault and Tom Lucas and Ted Berry and Jerry Spring, and Kiley and Stern and Sissel and Brush, and these judicial candidates. And so it's clear that you're going to have new leadership in this city next month. kind of leadership that your citizens can believe in, the kind of leadership that can move Cincinnati forward once again. And incidentally, I'd like to express appreciation to Ted Berry, because unbeknownst to him, one of his proteges in the OEO program is now a political coordinator for me. And I hope that he's going to be as successful in that capacity as Ted Berry is going to be in November of this year. And so we're speaking about leadership here in Cincinnati and Hamilton County and Ohio and across this land. Because our people understand that that's what this nation needs. That's what the American people, I'm convinced, are going to vote for in November of 1972. I think it's a tragedy that in this year, 1971, when our country faces such difficult and divisive problems, is that the major challenge facing the President of the United States is that the Americans who elected him no longer believe the things he says. I've tried to sense what the people of this country are saying to our leaders, and to those of us who seek leadership. And I think if I were to try to capsule it in a few words, I'd put it this way: that the people of this country would like to hear the truth. Now, through all the years of the 70s, they would like a government that tells the truth. You are creating here in Cincinnati what we must create across the country: a coalition which will put politics of truth back into public office. And you know, and I know, that the only thing that has put this coalition together is because this is your common determination. And when one or the other of the two partners loses that determination, the coalition will disappear. Because here, and everywhere in America, the challenges of our time transcend the barriers we so often build between each other. Both a rich man and a poor man can contract lung disease from breathing polluted air. Both a young woman and an elderly woman, if there is such a thing, both a young woman and an elderly woman can be assaulted on a public street. And both a black man and a white man can lose one job and fail to find another. And every citizen can feel fear and frustration and sometimes even despair. Whether it is our problems or our successes, we know as Americans that the things that unite us are stronger than the things that divide us. And our common duty is to become partners in progress instead of rivals for scarcity. A year and a month from now, I hope we can look forward to the triumph of national candidates the country can believe. I hope we can look back on a campaign that has started to make every man a brother and every dream a plan. And there is one dream we all share: the dream of a more decent life for every American. But we cannot take even the first step, a return to prosperity, under an administration so afraid to face the truth that it uses the agencies of government to hide it. I remember that meeting here in Cincinnati in 1968, and I remember warning that Richard Nixon represented policies that could lead us into recession and economic decline. And I remember his response, and you do too. He said the only unemployment that would follow when he took office was the unemployment of President Johnson's Council of Economic Advisers. Now we know the truth. Unemployment in this country has climbed from the 3.5% of that day here in Cincinnati to more than 6%. 3 years ago, the rate in this city was only 2.8%. And last July, it was more than twice as high. And the rate in the state of Ohio has more than doubled during the Nixon administration. 5 million skilled American workers did not go to work last Friday, and they will not go to work on Monday morning. How has the president responded to the truth after almost a third of a decade of neglect? He has given us his fourth economic game plan in 2.5 years. And he offers the largest single corporate tax cut in the history of this country. He offers $14 billion between now and the last of 1972 to big business, and only $5 billion to workers and consumers. A program like that is not the program we need in America in 1971, because it isn't right. It isn't right by any standard. It is not good economics. It is not good social policy. And it is not fair. President Nixon hopes to encourage the production and installation of new plant machinery through federally subsidized investment. But the fact is that only 70% of our industrial capacity is in use today. We could be producing a third more than we are without building another new plant. Corporations see a third of the machinery they already have lying idle. Because, and why? There are too few buyers for the goods they already produce. That is a fact. What business needs is markets, not special privileges. Customers, not a tax break. Sales. Not a $9 or $8 billion investment tax credit. Ask the managers at Milacron. They could hire more workers and make more machine tools, but they cannot manufacture more consumer demand. Consumer demand for the products machine tools build. So that's why I have proposed a consumer tax credit to return $7 billion to average income Americans. Instead of pumping more and more money into corporations in the hope that some of it will eventually trickle down. You know, the best definition of the trickle-down theory I've ever heard is the idea that what you do is give more money to millionaires so that they can buy more Cadillac limousines and thus hire more chauffeurs. That would result in a massive impact upon our unemployment problem. But the consumer tax credit would give each taxpayer $100 worth of encouragement against his federal tax bill to increase spending on consumer durables, on items ranging from a TV set for a retired steelworker to a dining room set for a newly married couple. And this kind of consumer credit can make a real difference to the workers and businesses of Cincinnati. 70% of the increased unemployment here is in the durable goods sector. In July alone, manufacturing in that sector here fell by 13.5%. The consumer credit can reverse that trend. It can generate demand and markets for Milacron and Ohio Valley Machine. Markets mean jobs. Jobs for machinists and electricians. Jobs for factory workers and repairmen. Jobs for salesmen and carpenters. And that is the fairest way to build jobs. The way Franklin Roosevelt and John Kennedy built prosperity. By putting money in the wallets and pocketbooks of America's families, not just in the treasuries of American corporations. And it isn't fair to let just a handful of Americans find out what their country can do for them. We can do better. We can do better than this administration. And let me remind you of what this administration's economic record is. In just one sentence, it pledged prosperity, it produced recession, and now what is the economic miracle that it promises? In so many words, it promises to get us back where we were when they started. This administration has had a 2.5-year losing streak, and we can't afford it any longer. Your Bengals can reverse a losing streak in 1 week's time. This administration has had 3 years, and now a new coalition of Americans, to borrow your word here in Cincinnati, must face the truth and change the truth and take America to prosperity. And it must be more than that. In his State of the Union message last January, President Nixon announced, and you all heard him, what he called the Second American Revolution, welfare reform and revenue sharing. And on August 15th, he suspended that revolution. If the first one had lasted no longer, all of us in this room would be British subjects today. And what is the result of his decision to face the truth, or not to face the truth, about revenue sharing? Well, let me say to you that the citizens of Cincinnati and the cities of Ohio are facing the truth that requires that kind of assistance for America's municipal governments. Because you, who are citizens of these cities, pay the property taxes and the other local taxes, and you fight the battle over higher rates. The president's decision will renew that battle and increase the burden on every taxpayer in this city. You walk the streets of Cincinnati. You experience the fear born of night and darkness and rising crime. Will the loss of revenue sharing force you to do tomorrow what Cleveland has already done? Will you be forced to take policemen off their beats because you cannot afford to pay their salary? You send your children to the schools in this city. And you know that whether they learn and how well they learn will determine the quality of their lives and the shape of our future life in this country. Youngstown has already closed schools because there isn't enough money to keep them open. The president's decision to put off aid to our cities and states can keep them closed. And it may mean that Cincinnati will have to go through with the emergency plan to shut down elementary school libraries and to cut kindergarten class time in half. The first kindergarten in this nation was founded in Ohio. The school system in this state is a child of the Northwest Ordinance, which laid the first charter of education in this country even before the Constitution of the United States was written. And I believe that system and your sons and daughters are more important than a $14 billion bonus to big business. And that is what we must tell Mr. Nixon. I have introduced revenue sharing legislation to return federal funds, which means your funds, to our declining cities and our pressured property taxpayers. Governor Gilligan has called for a system of federal income tax credits, and there are countless other programs to provide help for local government and the taxpayers who support it. We have no lack of plans, but we somehow lack the words to make President Nixon recognize the truth that our cities and our states and our people can no longer survive on broken promises and White House press releases. In 1961, John Kennedy told us that we could be better than we thought we were, that a new generation of Americans could build a country worthy of all that had gone before, that we could make peace in the world and build prosperity in our own land. With that expression of faith, President Kennedy inaugurated not only a new administration, but a new time, a time of hope and of trust and of confidence in our country and in ourselves. Americans have changed since 1961, bit by bit. Hope died near an underpass in Dallas, on a motel balcony in Memphis, and on a kitchen floor in Los Angeles. In a war half a world away, and outside a closed factory just down the street. And so in 1971, Americans are living with doubt. Doubt about our political leaders. Doubt about our public institutions, doubt about each other. We doubt increasingly that these doubts can ever be resolved. Most of all, we want to know the truth from our government and from each other about our collective wisdom and about our collective shortcomings and weaknesses. About the strengths we still have, and about the tasks we must all face. We want a politics of truth to guide our destiny in the years that lie ahead. More than anything else, a new coalition for change must be guided by the simple decency of caring enough about people to be honest with them. That is the way to keep this country, to keep it free and to make it as good and as great as it can be. And this is what our people want. They understand that they can be tempted by appeals to their fears and their suspicions and their doubts. But they also understand, on the basis of the evidence of 2 centuries' experience, that they can also respond to appeals to the best of which they're capable. And in this time of great division, fragmentation, and divisiveness in America, I see on the faces of Americans of all descriptions, and I can see it coming from their hearts and their minds and their spirits, that they're eager, they are hungry to respond to the best of which they're capable. Because they know their best is what it will take to rebuild America as a place of hope, as a demonstration that there can be in at least one place on this planet a society in which justice, full justice, is within the reach of even the least member of a society. So I say good luck to your coalition. And let the beacon light of truth be its standard. So long as it is, I know you'll win political victories. Not because political victories are important in and of themselves, but because the right political victories are the way we can correct what is wrong with this country and take the high road once more toward that higher plateau of peace, and opportunity, and justice that can make this once more a land of hope for our people and for all mankind. Thank you.